It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you've been enjoying this podcast and want a super easy way to support it, you can simply find me on YouTube by searching Demon Creep. A subscription is a great help. But if you want to help the longevity of this podcast, my channel offers channel memberships for as low as 99 cents a month. Thank you, and keep enjoying the Demon Creep podcast. Hello, souls and demons, and welcome back. We have some true stories for you all today, and it will begin shortly. For your listening pleasure, there will be few ads ran, with one ad break after story number two. Thank you for your support. It's time to sit back, grip your seats, and enjoy. My MSN crush was involved in something sinister, and I was the target. I'm mostly a lurker on here, but have considered sharing my story several times. I was hesitant because absolutely no one knows about this, not my family nor my friends. I've held on to this for 10 years now, and figured it was time to let it out. Plus, I think there are some valuable lessons that can be learned from my experience. Here we go. Caution, long story ahead. For reference, I am a 27-year-old female, and this story takes place 10 years ago when I was 17. I had just started university and was excited about having a fresh new start, since I'd always been a nerdy outcast in high school. I had never had a boyfriend before. I'd never even been on a date, so I was naive and optimistic about boys. My introverted and awkward personality hadn't magically changed since entering university, so it's safe to say that I didn't meet any interesting guys at school. One late night, I was in my room working on an assignment on my laptop when I received a request on MSN Messenger. The email address was a boy's name with some numbers. The name was clearly ethnic and likely someone of the same origin as me. Intrigued, I accepted. For the sake of the story, we'll call this boy Ken. We got to chatting and I asked him how he had gotten my email address. He dodged the question. I let it go, not thinking too much of it. This was from a time when it was normal to accept anyone and everyone as a friend on Facebook and other social media platforms. As Ken and I continued to talk, I learned that he lived in my city and apparently wasn't much older than me. As I'd guessed, our roots were in fact in the same country. Let's call it the motherland. I asked him why he didn't have a picture of himself on his display picture, and this prompted him to suggest that we turn on our webcams because he wanted to see me too. I declined, but he insisted. Somehow he convinced me, and we both switched on our webcams. I was pleasantly surprised and somewhat relieved to see that Ken was a good-looking young guy, chatting to me from the comfort of his bedroom, seemingly very normal. Our MSN chats carried on for a couple of weeks. They developed into texts, and we even had a few phone calls, after I had agreed to give him my phone number. I started to develop a crush on Ken. He'd asked me to go out with him a couple of times, but I was always pretty busy with school and our schedules weren't lining up. Finally, we found one afternoon when we were both free, and decided to schedule a lunch date. Ken had a car and offered to pick me up from my university after I was done for the day. I was a little too dressed up for my C++ programming class, but just right for the lunch date we had planned at a local vegetarian restaurant. Stupidly, I didn't tell any of my friends where I was going or with whom, because I was embarrassed about going on my very first date, at almost age 18, with someone who had randomly added me on MSN. I waited outside my building when a black car with heavily tinted windows pulled up beside me. The passenger side window rolled down and, sure enough, there was Ken, sitting in the driver's seat. I was happy to see that he was as cute in person as he was on webcam. However, what I wasn't expecting was the intense smell of weed floating out of the car. Not relevant, but part of the first impression. Admittedly, I was taken a bit back and was concerned that he might be driving high. He unlocked the doors and motioned for me to get in, so I did without dispute. As I sat down in the passenger seat, he immediately put his hand on my thigh. I nervously shifted my leg away. "So," I started, "do you know where the restaurant is? I can guide you if you want." He smirked at me but didn't say anything and just started driving. Okay, kinda weird. I thought maybe he was just nervous or awkward, both of which I could sympathize with. So I let it be. I was about to try my hand at a little small talk, which I'm no good at, when I noticed him heading towards the highway ramp. I started to worry because the restaurant was not far from my campus, and there was no reason for us to be getting on the highway. You don't need to take the highway. The restaurant is really close by, I can guide you. I tried to keep my voice steady, but I could hear my own nervousness. Ken finally spoke, for the first time since I'd gotten into the car. I thought maybe we could just go to my place instead. We can play Need for Speed and I can make lunch for you. I was 17, on my way to the house of a guy I just met for the first time, and I hadn't told anyone where I was going. My mind was racing. I knew that this would be an utterly stupid thing to do. Despite the clear red flags waving in my face, I decided that I didn't want to ruin our first date by rejecting his offer to make me lunch and play NFS together, which I told him I liked playing. Don't judge me. So, like an idiot, I reluctantly agreed to avoid being rude. We made it to his house. It was apparently his family's home and was situated in a sort of shady neighborhood. We stepped inside and, of course, no one was home except for us. It was sparsely furnished and looked unkempt, which struck me as pretty odd for a family home. He informed me that his Xbox was in his bedroom. I hesitated in the doorway, but he sat at the foot of the bed, in front of the TV, and patted the empty space beside him for me to have a seat. There was literally nowhere else to sit in his room, so I cautiously sat down, keeping as much distance as I could between us. I started to relax as we played NFS, and he made us PB&Js to munch on. I was about to laugh at myself for being overly paranoid, when Ken did something bizarre. He got up onto the bed and sat down directly behind me, his legs on either side of me, in an extremely awkward position, and tried to guide my hands on the controller. I started to ask him what he was doing, and, as if this wasn't uncomfortable enough, his hands moved from the controller and slid up under my shirt. That's when I really started to panic. I thought he was going to grope my chest, but instead he started squeezing and massaging my belly. I was more than a little chubby back then. Freshman 15 and then some. So you can imagine what that might have been like. I dropped the controller in pure shock and stood up, fixing my shirt. I was at a loss for words, and he did nothing but smirk at me and tell me he liked it. I felt completely disgusted and violated. I'd had enough. I lied and told him that I had a group project to work on and needed to go. He asked where I lived, so he could drop me home. Thankfully, I had the common sense to not tell him, and I asked him to drop me back to school instead, where I would be supposedly meeting my classmates. He obliged. After our very uncomfortable first date, I decided I didn't want to talk to Ken anymore. I didn't block him on MSN or on my phone, our only two methods of communication, but I rarely responded to his messages and I ignored all of his calls. Once, he messaged me on MSN around 11 p.m., asking me to come over and telling me that he would send a cab to bring me over to his place. Thoroughly annoyed, I responded, "What do you take me for? Why do you even think I would want to do that?" He replied saying, "No sex, I promise." Just bizarre. I was disgusted and didn't even respond. He continued trying to get in touch with me for months, and then suddenly vanished. I figured he'd finally gotten the point. Now, I wish the story ended here, but it doesn't. I last heard from Ken in late February. He had stopped trying to contact me shortly after Valentine's Day. In April, two nuclear families and I went on holiday to visit another relative, who we'll call Anne, who was living in the Caribbean at the time. Anne, whom I love dearly, was, and still is, a bit of an eccentric. She considers herself very spiritual and is an active member of a large, well-known spiritual organization. She is deeply connected with Motherland, more than the rest of us are, and goes back for frequent visits. While we stayed with her in the Caribbean, she told us about her most recent spiritual trip to the Motherland, where she met a wealthy and well-connected local woman through the organization, who quickly became a very close friend. Let's call her Connie, the con artist. During our visit, Anne introduced us to Connie virtually over Skype, because Connie lives in the Motherland. We chatted with her a couple of times throughout our vacation, via Skype, and got to know her a little bit. Little did we know back then that Connie, who Anne had spontaneously met halfway across the world in Motherland, would soon wreak utter havoc on our lives. Now that's a story that I'm just not, and may never be, ready to tell because of how many lives were affected and the severity of the damage that had been inflicted. What you need to know is that Connie was an outright criminal and con artist who had been targeting our family from long before Anne had actually met her. Their meeting was no coincidence. Not only did she manage to steal over $100,000 from our family, but she took any peace of mind or sense of security we ever had. When we finally caught on and confronted her, she insisted that we were mistaken, but disappeared into thin air once we forced her out of our lives. You're probably wondering what on earth this has to do with my story about Ken. Well, get this. The situation with Connie lasted many months. The whole thing is kind of a blur to me now. But we first spoke to her online in April, and I remember the whole ordeal lasting well into the fall. While she normally resided in Motherland, Anne had invited her to visit and stay with us where we, my whole family and I, presently live. That's when things really took a turn for the worse. Some of the things I clearly remember and are important to the story were that, one, the whole time she was staying with us, she was trying to convince me to transfer schools to a very obscure school and program in the U.S. I don't even live in the U.S. and was actually getting very pushy about it, and two, she had asked me if I was a virgin and told me to save myself for my husband. Disturbing, I know. During this time, I was so emotionally drained and stressed that I didn't even really think of anything but the situation at hand. In fact, I had stopped socializing almost entirely and even started habitually skipping classes. I had lost contact with my high school friends, and my university friends were too new to really care. So my strange behavior and new destructive habits went unnoticed. Fast forward to one day, after Connie's final disappearance in the fall. I was at home with my dad when my cell phone rang. I looked at the caller ID and it was a number I didn't have saved. So it was showing the contact information as whatever name the phone was registered under. My heart dropped into my stomach. My phone displayed a name. The first name was a man's name, and the last name was the same last name as Connie's. I started to panic and ran into my bedroom to answer the call. I had no idea what to expect. When I picked up the phone, I was greeted by a familiar voice. It was Ken. I honestly thought I was going to puke when I came to a sudden realization that he had been part of this whole sick plot. Of course, I don't have hard evidence to prove that he was connected to Connie, but let me explain. The timing of his appearance and reappearance into my life, the last name, a fairly unique surname, originating from the part of Motherland where Connie is from, and I had never known Ken's last name until then. And the fact that he contacted me out of the blue, and I had no idea why or how, were all too bizarre to be a mere coincidence. Of course, I freaked out at Ken when he called, and I told him that if he ever called me again, I would call the police. His response was just a weird, dry half laugh, and then he said, "Well, okay then," in the most creepy voice you can think of, and hung up. I knew in my gut that this was their last attempt to get back in touch and somehow slither their way back into mine, my family's lives. Thankfully, I never heard from Ken again after that day. A while after this all ended, I was having a conversation with a family member, who was also very closely involved in all of this, about the whole ordeal, and she told me she'd sensed something extremely wrong when Connie was pushing to have me sent off to the US, to that obscure school. She had an unshakable feeling that Connie was involved in some sort of human trafficking scene, and that if I left, she would never see me again. The horrifying pieces came together for me at that time. I was just too damn naive to have seen it before. The memories flooded back to me when I heard that. How Ken had told me no sex, I promise. When he invited me over and how Connie was telling me to remain a virgin. As I said, I had never told a soul about Ken, nor about the weird V-card conversation with Connie. I strongly and firmly believe that Ken had been some sort of player in Connie's game, and was just there to keep me away from guys and prevent me from having a boyfriend. For those who may be wondering, we never called the police on Connie or Ken because nothing illegal happened at face value. It's very hard to explain. I'll also mention that I tried to find Ken online many times after this all ended. I don't know why. I felt like I wanted to expose him or to call him out, and was not able to find even a sliver of information on him. Not by the name Ken, nor by the name on the caller ID. It was as if he didn't even exist. Also, I am awful at directions and didn't remember his address or where his house was exactly. I'm sorry if the story is convoluted or confusing. I'm trying to get my point across without giving out any names or too many details, which makes it a little challenging. I hope this can serve as a warning to young people to never trust anyone, to do your thorough checks on people, especially those you meet online, and to be very aware and wary of people's intentions. Also, from this incident onward, I can't stomach a lot of these spiritual organizations. I never liked the idea of them to begin with, but now that I've truly experienced how they can attract both vulnerable people and also unsavory characters who are looking for someone vulnerable to prey on. No judgment for those who are into that sort of thing. It's just definitely not for me. I would like to hear what you guys think about this. Do you think my suspicions are plausible? What do you make of this? Stay safe, everyone. And to Ken and Connie, if I see either of you again, I'll kick you in the face. Rot in hell. This happened over 20 years ago. I was driving back home with my girlfriend at the time. It was Christmas Eve, and my mother's family used to hold a large celebration at my aunt's house in Escondida. This was my girlfriend's first time meeting with my extended family, but she got on quite well with them. We spent the majority of the afternoon and evening talking, playing poker, opening presents, and drinking an assortment of adult beverages. My girlfriend had been quite inebriated by the time we had to leave. Therefore, I'd be driving us home. It was around 11 p.m. or so. I was driving my girlfriend's car along Highway 211. Now, this stretch of road is surrounded by farms and dense patches of forest, and parts of it are unlit. But nothing to fear. I grew up in this area, so I knew this road like the back of my hand. The both of us were just driving and talking away. Just two young lovers, making the most of our moments together. There is a portion of the highway that descends down an enormous hill before crossing Deep Creek. Surrounding both sides of the road are thick forests. There are no lights. The only thing we could see was the area directly in front of our headlights. I drove down the hill, across the bridge, and uphill through more forest. It's as the highway starts to flatten out that it happens. Something sprints across the road so suddenly that I almost hit whatever it was. I slam on the brakes. I turn to my girlfriend and ask her if she saw it. She confirmed that she had, but she couldn't make it out what it was. Maybe it was a coyote, as they are fairly common sight in the area. But something felt off about it. Whatever it was that ran in front of the car disappeared into the woods next to the road. Coyotes don't usually just dart out in front of cars. Not like that, anyway. So for some reason, I decided to check it out. I turned the car around and switched on the high beams to better light up the forest in which this thing had vanished in. I step out of the car and walk towards the woods. I don't see anything. But now it feels like perhaps I'd made a grave error. My heart is pounding, and the hairs on the back of my neck are standing at full attention. But I still don't see anything unusual in the trees. Suddenly the car horn blasts. It's not a beep, beep, beep that you get if, say, your driver or passenger wanted you to hurry up and get in the car. No, this was a long, blaring beep. I walk back into the car and ask my girlfriend why she leaned on the horn like that. She said nothing. Instead, she pointed to a spot about 50 feet from where I was standing. I looked over in that direction, and that's when I saw it. Surely this was the thing that ran out in front of our car. It was a man. He was completely naked. His skin was covered in dirt and mud. And in one of his hands, he was holding a hatchet. He looked back at us. And then, he smiled and waved to us, just before turning around and walking back into the forest. Needless to say, we got the hell out of there. Once we were safely driving again, my girlfriend explained what had just happened. While I was trying to look for the man in the area he initially vanished in, he circled back around and came out from another spot in the forest, beyond my car headlights. My girlfriend had seen something out of the corner of her eye, and that's when she saw him. Before she honked the horn, he was walking towards me, his hatchet raised as if he was making to strike me. We called the authorities once we got safely back home, but they never found anybody. Or if they did, they just didn't tell us. But the officer we spoke to explained his theory. The man was obviously looking to ambush unsuspecting lone travelers, for Lord knows only what reason. We all agreed that my girlfriend's quick thinking saved my life, as it let my potential killer know that I wasn't alone out there. I moved back into the area recently, so I now drive that highway often. No naked hatchet man sightings yet, but I can tell you that I'm definitely extra vigilant now, especially near Deep Creek. So, this happened about 5 years ago while I was 9 months pregnant. I was Christmas shopping at the mall with my then 7 and 15-year-old daughters one Saturday night, in a very safe city with very low crime rates. There was an Applebee's connected to the mall, and we ended our shopping pretty late, and the mall and stores were starting to close. So I took my kids to the connected Applebee's for a late dinner. We finish up eating at about 10 p.m., and leave at the Applebee's entrance into the practically deserted parking lot with shopping bags in tow. As we got to the car, I was in the middle of maneuvering the shopping bags on my arms to find my keys, when a 50-ish-year-old crusty-looking guy starts walking up from somewhere in the parking lot with shaggy gray/white hair and a faded flannel shirt and old jeans. I noticed him briskly approaching when he was about 40 feet away and he said, "This is a stick-up. Give me all your money." My blood ran cold and I stared at him owlishly and shaking, said, "What?" He then said he was just kidding and came up and stood right next to my daughters, who were standing on the other side of the car waiting for me to unlock the car to let them in. He then starts making small talk with me and my girls. He's asking things if like they were being good girls for Santa, how old they were, if we got all of our Christmas shopping done, what kind of things did we get, etc. He didn't seem drunk, high, slow, or mentally challenged at all. He was very coherent and seemed of sound mind. Mind you, I was a heavily pregnant woman, alone with my two daughters in a mostly deserted parking lot at 10 o'clock at night, who was being approached by a stranger who came and stood right next to my kids, on the other side of the car, just shooting the breeze, talking to me and my kids, with his hands in his pockets, and occasionally looking over his shoulder. I didn't want to aggravate him, so I was politely conversing with him and trying to look calm and nonchalant, while trying to disguise my frantic hands digging inside my giant purse for my car keys. This exchange went on for a couple of minutes, while he periodically kept looking over his shoulder. I was silently panicking and trying to politely keep the situation from escalating by calmly and nonchalantly talking to him while also trying in vain to find my damn car keys to get us out of there. They were in there hiding damn good. I felt that at any moment, he was going to pull a knife or a gun, or rob me, and my kids were right next to him, away from their mother on the other side of the car, and I couldn't find my fucking car keys to get my kids into the safety of the car. He kept trying to engage them in conversation, and I could see that my oldest daughter was a little weirded out, and she kept glancing at me to gauge my assessment/reaction to this situation. Kids often tend to not recognize potential danger when they are with their parents, since they see us as their protectors. And being that he was only talking and acting friendly, and I was doing my best to stay calm, they were oblivious to the alarming situation we were all in. And being 9 months pregnant and that I was no match for this full-grown man, especially if he was hiding a weapon on him, while still desperately digging for my keys, I had tried to politely give him hints that the conversation was over by saying things like, "It was nice chatting with you, but I gotta get these kids to bed. And it was nice meeting you." And telling my girls to say that it was nice meeting him, too. My polite attempts to get this guy to leave wasn't working, because he kept sidestepping my attempts and asking them what their favorite school subjects are and how nice young ladies they were, etc. While I was struggling with the shopping bags and digging in my giant cluttered purse for my car keys. My outgoing 7-year-old was completely oblivious to how not okay the situation was. Because he was being friendly, and because of the whole "I'm with mommy so I'm safe" child mentality. So she started talking about what she picked out for daddy for Christmas, and started enthusiastically talking about kid stuff, and asking him if he knew what Minecraft was, etc., and keeping this creep from leaving us alone by keeping him engaged in conversation. They didn't realize that I was becoming desperate to get them the hell out of there. Then I suddenly felt the sinking feeling of dread, when I realized that I may have lost my keys in the mall, and that we were stuck outside with a strange man, who kept looking over his shoulders and was showing no signs of walking away. And I was thinking that he was waiting for the perfect moment to pounce. All he had to do was grab one of my girls and threaten their life, knowing it would make me do whatever he wanted as long as he wouldn't hurt them. I started to feel my adrenaline start to spike, and my heart and stomach started doing flip-flops, and I felt like at any moment shit was going to go down, as the gravity of realizing that there were no other people or witnesses around, and that we were totally alone with him. And at that moment, the odds were stacked against us, and that he has his chance. that he all of a sudden was all like, "Okay, it was nice talking with you. See you later." And walked off in the same direction as to which he came. It wasn't until then that I found my keys and unlocked the car and told my kids to get in fast. And I got in too and locked the doors and started the car and drove the hell out of there. My 15-year-old daughter lightheartedly said, "Okay, that was weird," and laughed. I was overwhelmed with a relief, and then I was confused over what had just happened. I thought to myself, why the hell would a guy of seemingly sound mind think it was totally acceptable to just go out of his way just to approach a woman and her kids in a deserted parking lot late at night just to chit-chat? But being that nothing happened, I brushed it off and joked about it too. When we got home, my husband greeted us and asked us how shopping went. And I said it went well. And my 15-year-old told him what happened in the parking lot and how weird it was, and was kind of joking about it. I started joking too, saying how I was mentally having a panic attack, while trying to look calm, and I started making fun of myself by telling my husband how I was attempting to inconspicuously rummage through my purse to find my car keys. My husband went completely white, and I acknowledged his horrified look of alarm, and I assured him that, albeit creepy, the guy was just talking and eventually left on his own. Now, my father-in-law is a retired sheriff deputy, and my husband went through the police academy training after graduating high school. He decided to go to business school instead of becoming a cop, and being that the knowledge he gained from that, plus growing up with a cop for a dad, I found out why my husband looked absolutely horrified when I told him the details. What my husband told me completely rattled me to the bone. My husband told me that he was 100% sure that the reason why the guy was hanging around us and chit-chatting was because he was waiting for me to unlock my car. And the reason he was standing next to our kids was because once I unlocked the car and the kids started to get inside, he was most likely going to force himself into the car with the kids and hold a knife or gun to them to gain leverage on me, to force me to cooperate, knowing that it wouldn't abandon my kids, which would force me to get into the car with them and do whatever he wanted me to do, which most likely would be to drive to a remote location to do God knows what. Being that he wasn't wearing a mask suggests that his intentions were to also leave no witnesses to identify him. I then remember that he was positioned by the backseat passenger door, where my 7-year-old was standing by waiting to get in. My husband then told me that the most likely reason why the guy ended up leaving was because it took so long for me to find my keys. And the longer it took, the more anxious and spooked it made him. And that whole time, I was desperate to find my car keys, which through some sort of divine intervention, stayed hidden in my purse, thus saving us from potentially being abducted. Thanks for listening to Demon Creep Podcast. Don't forget to support the podcast by following it. The best things you can do is head over to my YouTube channel, Demon Creep, and drop me a subscription and a couple of views. Sharing my podcast or YouTube channel with your friends is a great help. Remember, growing is easier when you do it together. Until next time, this is Demon Creep, signing off.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hurry into Menards right now and save big money. Miracle-Gro Raised Bed Soil helps you grow bigger, more bountiful plants. It provides the right foundation your plants need to thrive with a 100% organic formula that requires no mixing. Add Miracle-Gro Raised Bed Soil to help your plants grow with organic nutrients you can count on. Visit our garden center or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save